Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 449, Choose to Live.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And, well, that cold I thought I had last week was COVID, so...
Cool. Love that.
Apologies for the lingering, nasally, scratchy bullshit.
Yeah. It's good. It's great. I mean, hopefully you will get better is what you will do.
Oh, yeah. And that's definitely the worst thing that happened to anyone this week. And that is...
I can't, okay?
That is all we will speak on that topic. How about we talk about Choose to Live instead, which I was very disappointed to find was not a sequel to Choose Your Pain.
I saw this episode was called Choose to Live, and I went, you don't get to tell me what to do with my life, Disco.
Mm-hmm. So
you would rather
do Choose Your Pain then?
I would choose my pain in like a minute.
No, okay.
It's like, can we get the pain now or in over the course of the next 4 years? I will take the pain now.
See,
I choose the danger.
That's actually a really long time. Like, if mm-hmm. you're standing behind someone choosing something from the pain menu and they take a minute,
yeah.
Jesus Christ, just get on with it. Choose your pain.
Choose your damn pain already.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I choose for her. She chooses to live.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And
I
also
can't choose for you.
And also into the forest she goes.
Well, into the forest I go. I can choose for you because I'm the boss of you.
So. Yes.
But only in this show, not in life.
Yeah.
You're the boss of you for that.
Who's the boss?
I don't know. Probably the one who signed the paychecks.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I made that joke way before Community. They stole it from me. No, they didn't steal it from me.
I mean, Tony, you can't just go into this house where you're employed and go, I'm the boss.
Well, because he's a man, you see.
Uh-huh. Great.
Mm-hmm.
I am the boss of this house. Well, how about I fire you?
Mm-hmm. What if I called you a name that wasn't Tony? What are you going to do then?
Well, I will go to another house of employment and become the boss there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've run rings around her logically.
Mm-hmm. Now I am the boss.
Well, as tempting as it is to do the post-atomic who's the boss.
We should have done that back when we were doing the...
Every show ever. I think the various productions have now cleared the writer's strike from a year or so ago. So, like,
well, thank God,
we will no longer have that long wait between Trek things. I think,
mm-hmm.
but who knows?
And now, if the writing is bad, it's their own fault.
Mm-hmm. Well, those shows just stopped, which is good. Like the soap that I watched which isn't exactly good in the first place. I'll say
sure,
that. But
it is enjoyable.
They just kept going, and mm-hmm. they had Scabs writing it, and oof.
Don't love that.
No, it's not good. This reminds me, and you'll find out why in a second, why these things are connected. We are yet again doing our crossover with the defunct Drunken Time Travel.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll probably still call it Dead Podcast Crossover, even though we have been resurrected.
Yes. But
just because we got a little logo and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my turn to choose, and I chose things. Well, I chose to live. But I very
weird choice,
nearly,
but
I very nearly chose the Days of Our Lives Christmas episode.
Oh my God. Honestly, I would have been super down for that. Keep that in your back pocket.
I don't know what the Gavs would have made of that. Also, the whole thing was that it was It's a Wonderful Life, so it was an alternate version of characters you don't know. So you would have missed out on the whole bit.
No, Al, that's fascinating.
Oh, it was real dumb. And it was framed as there's a character who writes, and he was writing a cheesy Hallmark movie, and so this was his cheesy Hallmark movie that he had written.
That's amazing.
And so they had full license to make it real stupid. So, well, it's not too late to change. No. We're doing the things that I picked.
Yeah. So. I saw the things you picked, and they look pretty good. So
I did my best.
Yeah.
All right, but enough of this. Why don't I tell you about Choose to Live?
Yeah, Choose to Live, Al.
Yes, I do, for now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's my turn to write a summary, so naturally there are ninjas and swords, because I cannot catch a fucking break this week. This time, the ninjas in question are the Kuat Malat, those absolute candor nuns from Picard. Yes, Disco is continuing its proud tradition of taking a kinda cool thing from a different series and making it stupider. See also Section 31, and the forthcoming Section 31 movie. One particular Kuat Malat, I still don't know how to spell that and I refuse to look it up, is murdering Starfleet guys and stealing dilithium. So, naturally, Starfleet's response is to send Michael's mom, who is Kuat Malat, along with Michael, who is apparently incapable of performing even one mission without enormous conflicts of interest. Last week, it was her boyfriend whose planet exploded. This week, it's her mom who's directly involved with this. It's fine. It's fine. She also brings Tilly along on this mission because, I don't know, something about a comfort zone, I think. If you're wondering if a dangerous mission tracking down space ninjas is in Tilly's comfort zone, I guess you've never met her before? Eventually, these guys and another Kuat Malat that Mike's mom brought with her, who ends up also being murdered, discover that the nun in question was protecting some aliens with money for blood. No, really, I'll get to this more when I get to my good thing. It's actually pretty cool. Meanwhile, in the B plot, Stamets tries to protect his new BFF, the B is for book, by refusing to take him to Navarre to relive the horrible tragedy of his planet blowing up. Book goes anyway, and after they're both condescended to by some smug Vulcan straight out of Enterprise, he concedes to a mind meld with President Mom of Vulcan, whose name I really do need to learn because I like this character. Tarina. Her name is Tarina. Like your Earth Trina, but with an apostrophe. I looked it up. Anyway, this meld proves that Stamets has been barking up the wrong science tree, so now I guess it's back to the old drawing tree for Paul. And in the C-plot, everyone wonders if Gray will get his body. Then he gets his body. I would love to make this sound more interesting for you, but they're really not giving me a whole lot to work with here. Back on the alien ship, Mike and the gang manage to save the Moneyblood aliens, and then they haul that rogue nun back to HQ for sentencing. Whereupon the president immediately allows extradition to Navarre and washes her hands of the whole affair. But now she needs to pay for her crime, says Michael. She broke a bunch of rules and endangered a bunch of people because she believed that she was the only one who could solve this giant problem that had nothing to do with her, and now she's going to be punished, right? And then the entire future collapses in a puff of terminal irony.
Yeah, good work, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but like, when is she gonna? When does the punishment happen? That's not really your call, there, Mike.
Yeah, that's true. But also, Jesus Christ, we are the exact same.
But this is the thing I've taken an interest in this week. Why don't I get to decide everything about it?
Like, she decided that she wants to save this species of aliens, and that mm-hmm. she's the only one who can do it. Which
yep. no one else
feels like a Michael Burnham mm-hmm. joint, you know. This kind of leads me to my bad thing.
Yeah, let's.
I am so tired. This isn't just a Star Trek thing, but we're here to talk about Star Trek. Like, it happens in a lot of stuff, and I think it's weak writing in anything. Where someone has good reasons to kill and steal when they could have just asked for help.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they address this in the episode. She says she asked for the dilithium, but she couldn't tell anyone about the aliens, or they'd probably kill them or whatever.
Yeah.
And it makes logical sense. It's just such a, like, we find someone who's killing someone and stealing things and doing real bad stuff. And it's like, no, but they had a good reason. It's all okay.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not.
She murders a lot of people in this episode.
Murders or comes very close to murder.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, all right.
Mm-hmm. And yes, her heart was in the right place, but also mm-hmm. several people's hearts have been stabbed out. So
yeah.
Like, I don't know if
Michael was very clear on a certain man whose certain heart is now on the certain floor.
Yes. Well, he was a fucking captain or commander or so. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But he was a, you know, high-ranking guy on a starship.
I'm sure she feels really bad about it. Will be great comfort to the guy's spouse and children.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
Michael brings up repeatedly.
I understand the political, like, I like that they're doing this political thing this season.
Oh, yeah. It's been super interesting.
Because the president's kind of taken Michael under her wing, and Michael hates the... Like, it's a good exploration of that dynamic. We said this before, that we always liked in the original series of Kirk saying, yeah, but we're out here making decisions. And then there's always a bureaucrat saying, yeah, but the government has to do it this way. And
yeah.
Often the government guys have a point. It's not always the captain is right. It's just Michael has to learn this. Like, you're in an important position. We're rebuilding the Federation. This woman has a lot of legitimately tough calls to make.
Yeah.
And you're not going to like them all. And I don't know. I like that. I like that as a conflict.
It's like, okay, but also I want to arrest that woman.
Yeah. No, it's nice because she's like, I can usually see both sides of it, and that's my mm-hmm. favorite kind of thing. It's
yeah.
like, this is how you do that stupid Gene idea of no conflict. There can be plenty of conflict. Mm-hmm. Just give the various people legitimate viewpoints, so it's not a clear-cut good versus evil thing, mm-hmm. you know?
So. All this politics stuff is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Fake politics.
Oh, yeah, of course. We've said that from day one. Like, we both love that stuff. And again, in the position of rebuilding the Federation, it's very different than...
Oh, yeah.
If everything had been stable for 1,000 years and she was just staying the course, that wouldn't be nearly as interesting as, like, no, one wrong move and this all falls apart again. Like, I got to be real careful.
Fucking the president just grabbing Michael, just like, Michael, we're getting the Vulcans back. Shut up.
Why are you kicking me under the table, Madam President?
With both feet. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And, like, they're real close to having Navarre rejoin. Like, Tarina's like, I want this. And
yeah,
she does. I continue to love that character.
Oh,
she's
so good. We'll get to her stuff with Book in a minute.
Yes. But she does such a good job of, okay, you know what? We are not just Vulcan now. We are Vulcan and Romulus.
Mm-hmm.
And the Co-op Malad are legit. And I'm going to come here and I'm going to do the diplomatic thing where I try to respect them. And I also try to respect the scientific Vulcans. But also I understand the Federation. Like, she does the thing that it's hard to write that sometimes where it's like she's not manipulative. Like, the Federation president's a bit manipulative. And I like that as a character. But
I like that, too. That's an interesting direction, you know.
But I would like Tarina better as an actual leader. Like, she's genuinely being diplomatic rather than being opportunistic.
Yes.
And instead of what's the best gain for us right now, she's like, no, what will make the most people happy? And like, good. I like that. I like her. Mm-hmm. I like her a lot. I have from day one. And she's great.
Got my vote.
Yeah. So, okay, you want to talk about like her stuff with Book and all that?
Yes. Okay, so like this gets into like my bad thing, which is this feels like about half of a good episode.
Yeah, it sure does.
I mean, like the stuff with Book and Stamets and her is so fucking good, and every time we get to it, like, I'm like, yes, more of this, please.
Well, I thought last week that the Stamets and Book, that like I remember the broad strokes of the season, but I do not remember the details. I did not remember these ninjas, because why would I?
I mean, I know for a fact that ninjas just fall out of your brain if possible.
Yeah, but there were cool things in here to like, so I remembered those. Mm-hmm. But the Stamets and Book stuff last week felt like, okay, that's a one episode thing, and they'll acknowledge each other again, but that's it. But they remembered that, and they're continuing the thread. And Stamets is like, oh, you don't want to go listen to boring science stuff. And Book's like, come on, I need to listen to something. I can't listen here to my own thoughts, man. He's like, okay, the real thing is, I'm going to have to go there and describe in clinical detail the horrible shit you went through, and you shouldn't have to put up with that. And like, it was such a sweet, like, oh, their friendship is a real thing. It's not a done in one. It's a continuing thing. And I love that.
The thing, too, is Stamets trying to get him to not have to, like, it's a very Stamets way of, like, reaching out and trying to be friends with this guy, you know?
Yes.
Like, this feels so much like, well, no, a thing I can do is make it so that you don't have to deal with this.
It's, I don't know that, I don't remember, and I wish, now I kind of wish we'd done the series all in one go, because I am starting to forget the early seasons, but I do feel like this is kind of a reaction to Hugh. It's like, that was so out of my control and so terrifying, and now anytime I can save someone, I will.
Yeah. And I like that so much. Like, it actually feels like these are characters with arcs, like things are happening to them. Yeah. Which doesn't always happen on television shows.
Particularly this one that has some trouble with its characters that aren't Michael. But we've talked about how Hugh is much more of a presence and Stamets and Tilly's going through some stuff this year. Like the bridge guys still get nothing, but there are secondary characters who get things, and that's
good. Yeah, like that's the thing I've been thinking about. Like this season feels like they actually were like, no, we need to give people who aren't Michael is still the main character. We're very clear about that, but like, we are going to give everybody else sort of a thing to do, even if it's like Tilly's trying to figure out what her deal is.
Well, and
going forward,
I don't mind that. Like, yeah, she's trying to sort out, like, because she feels responsible for someone dying on an away mission. The episode we saw a couple weeks ago, and she wasn't, but she's like, look, I joined Starfleet 1,000 years ago, and it's what I wanted. Is that still what I want? I don't know. And it's like, she's only like 23, so I wouldn't call it a midlife crisis, but you know.
Well, midlife crises are hitting faster and faster, you know, by the time we get to the future.
That makes sense.
I had my midlife crisis at about 13, so.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I did like the Tilly stuff, but then there's so much other stuff that's the rest of your bad thing, right?
That's the thing. We get into, like, when we're getting into, like, the cool space archaeology, the two of us love space archaeology.
Yes, yes.
It's like one of our favorite things.
Anything that really reinforces just how old space is, because I have a pretty good sense of how big space is, but also, there have been civilizations come and gone 50 times over before we got here, and I love getting into that shit. That's great, too, you know?
No, so they find what's basically a generation ship that's everybody's been frozen in it.
Yeah, it's like a sleeper ship.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, the reason, like, What's-Her-Face has been protecting this thing is that, like you said, their veins are full of gold.
Yeah, I'll get into that in a minute.
And, like, every time we get to that stuff, like, the design on the aliens kicks ass. The set's really cool. Like, there's an ancient space elevator, which I weirdly love.
They were, well, because it was a cute moment, too, where they're like, we should, I don't know, try to beam up or maybe rappel up that thing. And Michael goes, or we could take the turbo lift.
Yeah.
And she points over to this thing you're talking about. And yeah, that was great.
Like, all that's great, and then we have to pause for another fucking sword fight. And I'm the part of this show that likes a sword fight. But these were some boring-ass sword fights.
I am willing to concede that, narratively, there is a time and place for sword fights. Not so much in Star Trek, but okay.
Star Trek, weird place for sword fights. Like,
and, like, if you're doing Klingons, okay, and I guess some Romulans have it, too, and I don't know, it's just... Mm-hmm. What they always do is like, well, this is like an Earth culture. This is like, I'm sure they were going for the samurai thing and a couple other things like that. And like, you're not adding anything here. It's
the thing is, they show up and you're like, that's a ninja. Like, these guys are going to fight Daredevil in about a minute. Like, they look exactly like,
Or they're going to disguise themselves as a bush and fight the Tick.
Yep.
Those are the only ninjas I like.
Those are the best ninjas.
We are a bush.
Yep. I like a lot of ninjas, but those might be the best ones.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite single panels in comics history.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. And then you got the whole, well, I like how you describe the other plot.
Oh, hang on.
With Adira and...
Oh, yeah. Then we get into Grey's Anatomy.
Very good. A+.
Which is so boring that I forgot it existed, honestly. Yeah. Like, you're like, and then the third plot, I'm like, was there a third? Oh, right. Adira, a character I really like.
Yeah, but like you said, Adira is becoming all about their boyfriend. Like,
that is
bad for any character when their romantic partner becomes their whole character. Like, this,
that's the thing. They spend the entire episode just next to his bed, like, waiting for him to come back to life. And I'm like, God, there must be more we could be doing with this, you know?
Also, or they could just get on with it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I've incorporated. Now I'm a character. Now I can do something.
Listen, I am not the biggest fan of a let's go into somebody's brain adventure, but like, this is the perfect place for a let's go into somebody's brain adventure and help them, you know?
I could relax my annoyance with that for the Trill, because the Trill have a whole history of memory, and like, you could do something with that.
We have to bond your memories of what this guy is with like his memories of what this guy is or something. Like, you could,
they did a bit of that when Adira went to Trill.
True.
Like, that was pretty good. But yeah, you could get more into that.
Yeah. Like, anything's better than her sitting beside his bed waiting anything's better than them sitting by his bed waiting and Hugh occasionally looking in on them.
Yeah. I mean, Hugh was very sweet and once again, between Saru giving Tilly some good advice and Hugh, I'm reminded that there are two very level-headed, very responsible adults on this ship, and they are Hugh Culber and Mr. Saru, and that is it.
Mr.
Everyone
Saru.
Everyone else is a chaotic child.
Kind of a train wreck.
Yep. But those two really like the dads of Discovery.
Saru has been so good this season.
He's been good all along, but you're right.
He has always been such a great character.
Yeah, one of our favorites.
Like, he's gotten to like a weird place of serenity in this episode and like
serenity.
Serenity, and I really like it.
Yeah, no, me too. It's great. How you doing, buddy?
I enjoyed being a parent, and now I enjoy also being in space and spritzing my plants and helping Tilly.
He's helping Tilly, and he's also he's like, I have a Zoom chat with Kaminar, and she's like, say hi to Sukal for me. And he's like, no, it's not about that. Like, I talk to him regularly, but this is about helping Kaminar get back into space. And it's like, oh, cool. He's also doing like civic responsibility stuff. Like, no. You guys need to be part of the Federation, and part of that is leaving the planet.
Yeah, that rules. I love that so much.
Let me, a man who works on a spaceship, help you with that.
Yes.
Good job.
Yeah.
It's great.
The bit with Michael, too, where where he's like, you should take Tilly.
Yeah.
She could use this sort of thing right now.
Mike's like, I was going to bring a security guy because of all the swords. And he's like, you got your mom. Your mom brought a sword guy. You're good at that. Maybe someone who's better at something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just in case. Mm-hmm. You gotta fill out the party better. You know, you got to balance. Yeah. You got like three tanks. You need a healer.
Yeah. I don't even go here, and I understand that.
Yeah.
Yep. I liked all of the character stuff between Michael and her mom, too. Like. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of things I thought were going to be like, ugh, this again. And it wasn't. It wasn't the whole Mike's mom is disappointed or doesn't trust her. It was very much the opposite of that. It was very much like, no, I wanted to go with you. I specifically requested you because I knew you could take care of business.
Yeah.
I'm like, aw. It's good seeing good parents.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I was fully expecting when Mike's mom shows up to like, all right, I know exactly where this episode is going. And honestly, I didn't for once.
No, like a next gen episode, even a half decent. I'm not even saying like they it was terrible because of this, but it turned into a cliche. Yeah. Like the relative that we've never met before or only meet every so often comes in, and they are completely at odds with the main character, and then they have to come to an agreement. But like that's not what happened here, and it was nice.
Yeah, these guys are going to bicker for an hour and then
find
common ground.
This was a hard mission, and so we had some sparks, but like it worked, and I knew it would work because you're great.
Mm-hmm.
And I said this before, I continue to like Federation President sort of being another mom for Mike.
Yes.
And they had a couple of moments where her mom and the president were both there. And I was like, ooh, is there going to be a weird like jealousy thing? And there wasn't. But it's they come at it from very different angles, but they're both sort of mentors to her. Yeah. And I kind of like that.
No, if the setup for this season, and it kind of feels that way, but it could still veer off, is like Space President teaching Michael that, like, no, you really can't just do whatever you want all the time. Eventually, it will kill you. Like, that's a great arc for this character, you know?
Yeah, I'm 95% sure that is what it is. Like, because
I hope so.
They called that first one Kobayashi Maru, and it's a nice, like, that's why they introduced that in Wrath of Khan in the first place. It's like, Kirk, you can't just do what you want all the time. At some point, it's going to blow up in your face. And like exploring that further with a different character over a season makes it different enough that it's not just, more Wrath of Khan. You know what I mean? Like,
I still wish they hadn't put I don't believe in the no-win scenario into her mouth, but like,
She should have just bitten into an apple then and, you know, I know. But
gone downstairs to see her brother Spock in a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be like, help.
Mm-hmm. But I liked all that.
Yeah.
Of course. Help at a phone booth. But no, I liked all that character stuff. And then we get into the stuff on Vulcan, or excuse me, on Navarre, which is kind of your good thing.
Yeah. Like, I've mentioned this before. I love the pairing of Stamets and Book. Like, this is not a combination I saw coming ever. Like, Stamets taking all of this so personally is so good for that character. Like,
right.
Just the fact that he's like, no, I need to be able to help. I need to be doing things. And the first thing the Vulcans do is all shut down to so that they can think quietly. Yep. And he's just like, this is not helping.
Well, he's got a theory about the crazy anomaly. And he's like, four out of the five criteria have been satisfied. And I cannot prove the fifth, but I know. And like, I don't know a lot about science, but I know that's bad scientific method where you're like,
yeah,
I'm only missing one variable. This must be it. Like, mm-hmm. No, buddy, that isn't how science works. You have to prove it.
Well, and that's the other thing. I love that he's desperate. Like he's got that, like, no, I invented Spore Drive. I can figure this out. Why can't I figure this out? Why do I need help now?
And I also really like how they solve it. They're like, well, there would have been it's like a flash of blue or something, like a specific visual effect. And they're like, books, like, I told everyone before, I don't remember. I want to remember. This isn't me being difficult. I just don't remember. And Tarina's like, well, I could mind meld with you if you're cool with that. And we could look. And that's a going into someone's mind thing. But
yes.
I don't mind that because it's established from like season one of the original series. And they didn't see the flash. And it's like, well, it's not tachyons, which means it's not the thing Paul thinks it is, which means back, you know, you got to start
back
over
the old drawing board.
But I love Tarina, like, first of all, approaching melding the way it should be, which is, look, this is going to be rough for you. Are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I think I am. And I also like that. Because they swerved again. They zigged where I expected them to zag, where it was like, oh, he's going to relive that memory and it's going to make him angry and sad and like even more than he is. And he's going to want revenge and all this stuff. And instead he's like, no, what I was most worried about is that my nephew didn't hear me say I love you before I never saw him again. And seeing the memory again, he did see me. Like, he's a kid. He didn't clock what it really meant, but we connected for a moment. We made eye contact. So I got through to him, and that's important. And now I feel a little better about this. And that was great.
That was such a beautiful moment for this episode. I was you reach out to your nephew before he explodes.
Yeah, because like again, the thing you expect them to do is not that. And it was like, no, he actually got a time. And he also says, look, this isn't closure. This is still the worst thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
But there was one personal thing that was really bothering me, and that part's okay. So at least something isn't terrible about this. I'm like, I like that a lot.
It's really good, you know?
It's like I've been telling you, this season is where there's still a lot wrong, but they've really figured a lot more out about characters, about storytelling, and about how all this links together, because I remember how a lot of this fits into the bigger tapestry, and it's like, this feels a bit like a one-off, but there is, like, there's stuff. That connects to later, and that's they're getting a lot better at it. I'm glad.
I mean, this episode is real. It's real close to like a perfect Trek episode for me, honestly. You know,
The half of it that we liked. Yeah,
the half of it. Yeah, exactly. It's just like the fucking dumb dicking around with sword stuff that I don't care about.
Yeah, and all the stuff with Adira and Gray, which I like those characters, and I want them to move on and do something else. It's just. I saw this already. I saw it last week. I saw it 2 weeks ago.
This is some real wheel spinning, you know, like.
Yeah. And that was pretty much all they did last season. Like, they spun their wheels for 8 to 10 episodes and then they rushed a bunch of real stupid shit at the end. And they're getting better at that, but they're still doing a little of it. So,
but like for the most part, like I'm feeling pretty good about where we're going this season, you know,
and hearing your reactions and hearing your speculation. There's some stuff coming that I don't think you have any idea of, and that delights me.
That's very exciting. I love when a TV show can do that.
Yeah, especially Star Trek, which we have watched literally like 800 episodes of.
We watched all of it for a very long time.
Yes. Like, seriously, more than 800 episodes to this point.
Yeah.
Like, we've dissected every single one of them. So it's like, we've seen all the tricks. Mm-hmm. You need some new trick. It's, you know, when this was made, it was like 2021 or 22 or something. Yeah. And like, you need something else, guys. Mm-hmm. And they're finding it finally.
Yeah.
So that's good. My good thing, we touched on this
please.
A bit, but I love those aliens that you talked about.
Yeah.
They look cool. And the thing is, the chemical composition of their body contains latinum, which is well established in the Trek universe as being money.
Yes.
Like, so it's just nonstop grave robbers. These guys are just in cryo sleep or whatever, trying to like stay safe until they get to their destination. And people keep breaking into their ship and stealing their blood for the precious money inside it. And it's like, it sounds ridiculous when you say it like that, but it's such a cool, like,
I mean, that's a thing.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, we're one Detroit away from this being stupid, but it's not.
Well, you also have to go back in time. It's not modern Detroit.
That's true.
Yeah. Also, it's Enterprise, which is just inherently
everything. Well, look, everything about Enterprise is terrible all the time.
Yes, it sure is. Except Trip and Porthos. That's it.
Yep.
I will always remember the thing I said. I like it when Enterprise gives us a little animal to care about. And you're like, yeah, like Porthos or Trip.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's one of your observations that will stick with me. But no, I love that idea. And I love that the lost cause that the Kuat Malat lady, and I never wrote her name down because it doesn't matter. The ninja, you know.
Yeah.
The ninja antagonist who's described as, quote, doing lots of backflips. Yeah. just like, this is the lost cause. That's their thing. It's like these aliens who are just made of delicious latinum, you know. There's a story in an early episode of QI, it might have been the first or second series, where they talk about this extinct species of turtle that they discovered, I think, in the South Pacific, that was so delicious they could not manage to get them back to England on a boat. Because people just kept eating them. They couldn't, like, they would bring 20 of them, like, okay, we're going to eat 10. But the other 10 go to the British Museum and to the biologists and to the zoo, and they come back with just a bunch of, like, 20 shells. Like, whoops.
We got a lot of turtle bones. Do you want some turtle bones?
We sucked the delicious marrow out of them, but the bones are still intact.
These are really clean. I would hope so.
Yeah. You know, it's sad because humans ruin everything they touch, but it's also funny in a bleak way to me. Like, they're just so delicious. We can't help ourselves.
I mean, you want to talk about what people are like.
I know, but this is kind of an extension of that. There's aliens with latinum for blood. I don't know how people aren't just killing them when they're walking around, much less in cryo, you know, like. But it's
Quark sidling up. So, how's it going?
You gonna use that blood?
Just a little. Just a little bit of blood. That's all I'm asking for.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys hold, like 50 pints? I'll take like 48.
I know he was evil, and at one point he tried to steal my blood, but.
But it's like, that's the kind of idea that if we were still doing Endeavor, if I came up with that, I'd be like, I love this idea. I wish Star Trek would do this. But and like whenever they come up with some weird shit like that, I'm on board. You know, it's great.
We've said this a million times. It's using the pre-established lore but doing something new. Like, it's a great idea.
Yep, absolutely. And we know latinum is rare. That's the point of it being money. It's hard to find. If you just have a giant living breathing like race that's generating more of it all the time, that could get ugly.
This is literally a race of people who are hallucinating other people turning into hamburgers.
Mm-hmm. But also dollar signs at the same time.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
Oh boy.
No, it's a cool idea. And like you said, they look cool. And the archaeology, like the space archaeology stuff is cool. Like the architecture of the ship and all the like the weird symbols and the machinery. And the whole point was that this ninja lady was taking the dilithium so she could activate the ship and protect them. And like what she says is, because Michael says, like, we're giving dilithium to anyone who asks. And she's like, you're not just giving it to people, though, like individuals. I said, as a ninja nun would like some dilithium, please, you'd say fuck off, and because you'd want to know what I want it for, and I can tell you, or you'll come kill the aliens.
Fair.
She's got a point, but not she a murdering
have
a, point.
No, you have. It's a good point, well spoken. The only issue is all the blood on that sword you have there.
Mm-hmm. Why do you sword guys always have to talk about where your sword came from?
It's like, well, this is a perfectly weighted Andorian.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up, lady. Mm-hmm. Oh, my sword is so decadent.
Oh, he's so stabbed. Shut up, lady.
Shut up, lady.
Oh, back to the gray. So we had the Trill. I don't know what the fuck they call it. The Keeper of the Worms, whatever the fuck.
Oh, I'll tell you exactly what he's called.
Yes, please do.
It's Guardian Z.
Sure is, which I'm sure is a Japanese cartoon that showed here in the 80s with a very bad dub.
Guardian Z and the Crystal Commandos.
Uh-huh. Like, I think they called him that in the Trill episode we did, you know, some weeks ago, and we might have remarked on it then, but I'd forgotten. And it's still stupid, because I recognize the guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
That's the thing. That guy pops up, and I'm like, you're not Guardian Z.
No, he is. I mean, he also looks like Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers with Trill spots. But
I'm like, no, I'm sorry. If you were Guardian Z, you would be in hot pink armor and have like a hologram on your chest or something.
And a robot head.
And a robot hand. And you'd come with like a little robot or a little like rubber alien that like was like made out of plastic.
Well, that would be the Trill Worm.
Yeah. There you go. See?
He does have that, but it's in his body, so... We can give him a pass on that one.
Yeah. There you go, then. The hologram stomach would flip open. You could take the worm out.
There you go.
Call me Toy Biz or whatever.
Mm-hmm. McFarlane Toys, probably.
Yeah, please don't call me McFarlane Toys.
I got baseball for you.
Your Scream action figure fell over a whole lot.
Do you like scared? Whoa! But the thing is,
the cord fell out of my Kaneda action figure. This is bullshit.
Akira, my cord. So, the thing I wanted to say about Guardian Z. So he's, and again, I forget what the title is. They said it, and I forgot. The keepers of the worms, whatever.
The Guardian Z and the keepers of the worm.
Yep. But I don't hate this, that he holograms in. I like the way they do the hologram effect now. I think I've talked about this. Because it flickers a little, so you know it's a hologram. But also, it means that whoever you're talking to over comms, the actor can be on the set.
Yes, which is good
interacting
stuff.
With the people instead of being on a screen where he's recorded later. Like... Mm-hmm. I like that better because I'm sure the actors prefer looking the guy in the eye and feeding on his energy and all that. And that's good. So, like, I like that effect. It works in universe and it's probably better for the performers and it's probably not even expensive. Like, it's good.
Oh, no, not anymore.
Yeah. I mean, they just put a little flicker in every now and then.
The thing is, having the big face on the view screen is such a Trek thing. But like,
oh, it's such an iconic thing. Yeah. Absolutely.
But like, you know, we can move on at this point.
Well, if you're dealing with aliens who don't have the same system, you can still do that. It's just when you're talking to your boss from Starfleet, he's got the same phone, so he can do that.
Sorry, Vulcan president, you've got an Apple. Your text box is coming in blue.
Mm-hmm. But my point was Guardian Z is there via hologram.
Yep.
And he can sense that Gray's presence is there. Like, okay, I don't know that we've ever talked about them having a telepathic sense, but I can hand wave that because the Trill have never really worked for me. So whatever, fine. That's it. Sure. The Vulcans are telepathic. Telepathy's a thing. Maybe the Trill are a little telepathic too. Whatever.
But I mean, the amount of times Troy would like get psychic readings from someone on another ship. It's just,
yeah, but
whatever,
that's a Betazoid. Like we don't know that the Trill can do that. Jadzia never had that.
That's
as far
true.
As I know. But my point is, I'm willing to say, fine, whatever. I'm not going to make a thing out of this, but he's there via hologram. He's hundreds of light years away. Mm. How can he sense anything through the phone? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Maybe they have telepathy, but I don't think they have phone telepathy.
My species has evolved the ability to sense phone telepathy. I'm sensing it right now.
Look, the Trill are natural hologram empaths.
Yeah.
Sure, fine. Whatever. I don't care.
We invented the wheel and then we invented the hologram, so don't worry about it.
And the aerosol deodorant.
And the aerosol deodorant, yes.
Yes.
One of my most favoriteest jokes from those yes, books.
It's very good. What else?
What else? Let's have a look here.
Oh, I like the fucking spider tracers they put on the dilithium.
Oh, God, right?
Where they talk about, like, oh, well, we know where the dilithium is. It's right here. Mm-hmm. And Tilly pulls off a thing about the size of a quarter off the dilithium that no one noticed.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, got a blinking light on it. It's, like, it's such a classic tracker from, like, a 60s movie. Like,
no, it literally...
You don't have a little cloaking device on it or something?
This activated my spider sense. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. Now I'll just ride my little dune buggy that's painted like my face over...
Sorry. I'm reading 70 Spider-Man comics right now.
Uh-huh.
And I just got to the spider buggy. Mm-hmm. It's so fucking good.
It's so dumb and so good.
He's just driving around and going, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Every issue I read where he had that, he's usually fishing it out of, like, Hudson Bay or something, because the previous adventure, he just sank it because he's a bad driver, because he's from New York and doesn't drive.
My good thing this week is Spider-Man comics.
Yes. The visual of Spider-Man sitting in a buggy that looks like his face is almost as good as him sitting behind a desk. Not quite, but close.
Nope.
We should all have cars that look like our heads. Like, Spider-Man and the Joker should not monopolize that.
Spider-Man just like, I don't have a car. You ever see me in a car? No.
Johnny Storm gave me this. It was a joke. That guy loves playing jokes on me. I don't like this car.
The thing is, a car company came to him and they're like, hey, Spider-Man, we'll give you a lot of money for you, Spider-Man, to design us a car because we think it'd be a good idea. And mm-hmm. Spider-Man goes, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but also I need to pay rent. So, yeah, mm-hmm. here, me and Johnny Storm built a car.
Yep. So good. Anyway,
Star Trek.
Yes. We got the, I say this barely ironically. I did like this, but it was also corny as fuck. There's a classic Kelpian saying, it's difficult to ride two veil beasts with only one set of buttocks.
That's very good.
Which is stupid, but I like it.
Saru's so good.
Yep. You're right.
What a great fucking character.
Yep. Also, I've really come around on Doug Jones. Like, I never disliked him. I just didn't know who he was, and everyone I knew went on about him. I'm like, who are you talking about? Who's Doug Jones?
He's an amazing suit actor, you know?
No, you're right. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, he's shown up a lot more in What We Do in the Shadows, the current season.
Like, yes.
He's been in it before, but he's been in it a bit more this season, and I think it's because they shot it after Disco wrapped, and he's like, guys, I'm available. My main gig is done, so if you want me around more, I'll do it.
Yeah, as far as I know, Guillermo del Toro doesn't have a new movie coming out anytime soon, so...
You guys want me to say Vampire a bunch? I'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Vampire. See? Mm-hmm. I still got it.
I always want to try the pizza pie.
What else?
Let's see. Most of this is just a list of TV shows that Guardian Z could be in. Guardian Z and the Pirates of Laser Island. Guardian Z and the Skeleton Robots. Guardian Z and the Grapple Beasts of Cyron 3.
Did you make all these up?
Yeah, off the top of my head.
Very good.
Oh, wait, I got more. Guardian Z and the Treasures of the Bird Women. Guardian Z and the Temple of the Sacred Cup.
Now, I'm picturing young adult novels with elaborate covers, but maybe this is a different medium. I don't want to step on your
thing. That's pretty much what I was thinking of, or like 90s children's programming.
Fair enough.
Guardian Z and the Tea Trees of Krylo 3.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it.
Guardian Z and Kid Video from Burger King team up.
And his backpack named Backpack?
And his backpack named Backpack.
Oh man. Back to the gray thing.
Yes.
I was starting to make this point, and we got off talking about Spider-Man's car, which is always better.
Uh-huh.
The thing about Gray and Adira, like, they're doing this, our love is enduring and come back to me because we're soulmates, and like it's sweet. It is sweet. But the show has told us Adira is not an adult. Adira is young enough that they can actually be adopted by by Paul and Hugh, which means Adira is, okay, let's say 17. Let's say as old as you can be while still being a child. I don't know anyone ever who found their true love at that age.
Like,
these two are super into each other. I believe that. I completely believe that. But what if they went through all this and broke up in a year because they're both young?
Yeah.
Because that's what happens when you're young. Not because their love isn't pure, but because they're young.
I mean, if that's the direction this show takes, I think that's interesting.
I don't think it is. I just, that's my first thought, is you guys are going on and on about your enduring love. And by the time you're in your mid-20s, you'll forget who each other are because you'll have different lives. That's just how growing up works, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's no slight at their actual relationship. It's just they're both children.
This is a thing I have seen in some other stuff with, like, queer young couples, where it's like, well, we can't break them up because, like, people will get mad at us. They need to be, like, a pure, for together forever fucking...
Well, and this show knows it has some shit to make up for.
So, yeah, exactly. You know. So, like, I would not be surprised at all.
Well, we only got another season and a half of this anyway. Yeah. So it wouldn't... I'm just imagining further on, these guys aren't going to be together forever. They're children. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine saying that to my girlfriend at 17. Like,
I mean, I can imagine saying it to her. I can't. Yes, I can't imagine being true.
No, everything that guy said was an idiot. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, me at 17. I can't speak for you, but
I was an idiot at 17. Trust me.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have misgendered you like that. So that's how you know I was talking about me.
I appreciate it.
It's you know, and also, since last week you pointed out the clumsy queer coding, boy, it was impossible to ignore this week.
Yeah, no, there's definitely more of that this week. Boy, there sure I forget is. What the exact line was, but it was
More of like, you'll be seen.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
It's like, you'll finally be able to live the life you deserve and no one can stop you or whatever.
It's a sweet sentiment, guys.
It is.
Maybe show don't tell?
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
I had one more note, which is near the end. The Admiral's like, yeah, this political stuff sucks. But here, let me explain it to you in a metaphor, because this is Star Trek.
Yeah.
He's like, imagine we're an orchestra and you're the first violin. You're the first chair violin. And it's like, of course she is. Like, she's the exact kind of nerd that was the first chair violin.
Yep.
Well spotted Admiral Vance. You nailed her completely.
Dude knows exactly who he's working with.
Yeah, like, and it was because of his metaphor, but also he's like, no, you were a super overachiever that used the really, no pun intended, I promise, fiddly instrument that requires a lot of, like, precision and practice and, you know.
First chair.
Not like the tuba where you just go, blah.
Tuba's like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, sorry,
I'm doing
tuba.
My best over here.
Look, a tuba sounds great. I'm just, I don't think, like, I could be wrong. This is assumptions based on nothing, but I feel like tuba's probably not as much precision.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
We're going to hear from so many tuba enthusiasts who are like, this tuba is the most precise of the brass instruments.
You might be right. And I should have learned my lesson 10, 15 years ago when I insulted, like, band geeks on our old show. Like, I remember that happening now. Like, oops, sorry. Okay, never mind. Disregard.
Yep. Never mind.
Clean your spit valves. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't know shit about the band. They made me leave.
Why?
Because I was very bad at it. My band teacher came up to me and said, Maggie.
Your band teacher came out to you? That's sweet.
No. Maggie, at the recital next week, I would like you to just do the fingering, please. Just do the fingering.
Gonna leave that one alone.
Uh-huh.
Not even gonna say anything about it.
In my defense, I'm very good at fingering now, so, you know, it worked out.
Good. I'm glad. Glad to hear it.
But at the time, it was devastating. It wasn't that devastating. The reason she told me not to play was because I didn't practice because I hated it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Never get to Carnegie Hall that way.
No, I don't want to go to Carnegie Hall. I want to go somewhere else.
Fair enough.
You're never going to be an accomplished, what the fuck did I play? Clarinet player. Good. I don't want to be.
I thought you were going to say the triangle.
Oh, I'm a very accomplished triangle player.
I was like, how did you do the fingering with the... Never mind.
Ding!
I'm not going to ask a lesbian how all that works. Just not going to do it. not going to do it. Okay. Is there anything else about this episode?
Well, if we're not going to talk about fingering anymore, then I think that might be it.
Look, if you want to talk about fingering the triangle, that's fine. I was just trying to observe some modicum of good taste here.
Why start now?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's everything.
Very well. Well, then, I suppose that's all for this time. Next week, we have All Is Possible, and I don't know. I mean, it's good to tell you that, but I don't know what that is.
Yeah. All sure is possible, I guess.
I guess. They have definitely, and I've seen all the titles ahead, they've definitely done away with the butchers, lambs, whatever the fuck, and the forest and all that shit. But, like, now they're back to kind of generic. Like, there's a way to do this, guys.
Yeah.
This ain't it.
I do appreciate that they're not just the whatever, although we did have anomaly last week.
Yeah, well, it was about an anomaly.
I mean, that's true.
That was also a winking eye in space.
Mm-hmm.
It's a winking
that is
eye.
A winking eye, Brock.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, as ever, the website is postatomichorror.com. If you want to write to us, it is postatomichorror@gmail.com. If you want to hear us review Lower Decks, the 15th of every month, you get it as a patron. Patreon.com/Algar. You can donate as little as $1 a month. You could get more if you like. And you get to hear that. And when we're done with Lower Decks, we'll move on to something else that everyone else won't hear for some time. So maybe Strange New Worlds or something. I don't know. So look forward to that. And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah. See ya, folks.
Sclusy.
Oh, God.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2024. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.